Hi everyone, this is Flo from The Great War. Happy New Year, I hope I can still say that. This is the 23rd of January now. Sorry for the delay, I think we had over a month pause with no episodes now. Kind of forgot to plan ahead in December when we recorded the last episode. But I promise there will be some more new episodes now, this being the first one of 2018. And I have a very special guest today who's going to introduce himself now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tanvir Kalo. I'm a senior at St. Lawrence University in New York. I'm a history minor and a government major, and also a McNair scholar at St. Lawrence.
Tell me, you told me we got in touch because you worked at the you did an internship at the World War I Centennial Commission, which, by the way, has a very good podcast you should all subscribe to. And during your internship, before your internship, you discovered something, and then you started a whole research process about a very interesting subset of American soldiers. Can you tell me more about them?
Yeah, so at the commission, I investigated about Dr. Bhagat Singh Thind, who was an Indian that immigrated in the early half of the 20th century to the United States and served in the U.S. military during World War I. And my supervisor at the time during my internship, Chris Christopher, encouraged me to find more about him. And I did, and I came across the South Asian Digital Archives website, which had digitized copies of Young India, which was a publication during World War I by Indians. And their August 1918 and October 1918 issues had six photographs and also the names of Indians that were serving the U.S. military during this period. And I was fascinated by this, and I used ancestorinstitution.com, which we had access to during through my internship, and I investigated documents and related to military service, but also their lives through censuses, naturalization records, and really pieced together their live stories, which I was just amazed by that. You know, we had Indians more than 100 years ago serving the U.S. military. So this became into a historical database, which I created at the Centennial Commission. I'm still updating, adding more to that database, but also publishing a few articles on the subject matter, and also currently investigating this topic as an independent study through my university.
Well, that's really cool. So there's a lot of topics, interesting topics we can talk about now. Maybe first of all, what did you find out about the soldier? Or maybe first, before you start with that, how did you even come across him before you knew how to search in the databases and everything?
I'm a history buff, and I, you know, from a very young age, I wanted to know a little bit more about my community. I'm an Indian American first generation college student, so I wanted to know what is our presence here in the United States, how far do we go back to? And there was this, so I just used Wikipedia in like middle school, high school, just to see, you know, get some ideas and information. And I came across Bhagat Singh Thind. It was, I believe the entry was Sikhs in the U.S. military, and had Bhagat Singh Thind in the U.S. Army uniform with his rifle facing the camera. And I was just blown away, and I really didn't think about it until I came back, came to the commission. I was like, well, there's this one soldier, maybe we could investigate it. And so the commission was really helpful in helping me push my research, but also encouraged me to find more and more. So they were really helpful. And the database, Ancestor Institution, really came together in terms of collecting more information and also piecing together their military service of these soldiers, particularly Bhagat Singh Thind, which is also a unique figure on its own. Because after the war, his citizenship was broke along with other veterans of Indian origin and also other communities, simply because they were not white. So he fought for his citizenship and went to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1923, lost because the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that people from India are not white, therefore cannot not apply and obtain U.S. naturalization.
Wow, that's really tough. So, I mean, the fighting didn't stop for him after the war, certainly. But let's talk about maybe his military service first to get a better perspective. So what were you able to piece together about him?
I knew that he served at Camp Lewis in Washington State. He was a private, didn't serve overseas. There's this great photograph of him, and he's the only, you can clearly see he's the only person of color. And also the only one wearing a turban, was surrounded by Caucasian men. And he was honorably discharged, so it was really interesting. And actually, I can also his biography I pieced together at the website for the World War I Centennial Commission. And he basically entered when the United States entered in 1917. He enlisted, and he was reached the rank of acting sergeant. Sorry, as a private early on when the war ended. And so he didn't really serve that long in the war, and it was basically in one of the depot attachments at Camp Lewis. So he was clearly, you know, patriotic. He really wanted to serve his country, and didn't get the chance to serve overseas, but nonetheless, still put on the uniform, still trained, and was and just as American as any other individual during that war.
So, and you also found through the publication Young India, you mentioned, you also found some other Indian Americans that served in the army at that time. Did you find out some more similarities or differences to the story you just told?
Yeah, so I did see that, so especially for the racial classifications at that time for the U.S. World War I draft card, majority of them, but not all of them, were listed as Caucasian, which was really interesting. And after the war ended, if they lived, the 1930 census was reversed in terms of that the racial classification was listed as Hindu or East Indian, which I found really interesting because the draft cards were were registered in 1917, 1918. But like I said, with the U.S. government revoking the citizenship, they clearly change the policy saying, okay, yes, these people are clearly not white, so we need to change their classifications. So things like that. And a lot of them served on the West Coast and Camp Lewis and other bases, and also in the South, and also as well as Camp Upton in Long Island, New York, which was really interesting. So these three locations were very major for Indian immigration 100 years ago and developing economic and also social ties there.
Do you know what they, you said there was this publication which is called Young India, which kind of rings a bell for me. I think we used that name when we did our special episode about India. So in relation to, you know, independence movement and that kind of like self-determination movement in India, do you know if for what reasons they immigrated to the U.S.? Did this self-determination movement have any kind, anything to do with it?
Yeah, so a lot of them came for economic reasons. Bhagat Singh thinned, and some of the soldiers as well came for higher education. Bhagat Singh thinned wanted to become a scholar of religion, and he went to the University of California, Berkeley. So it was mostly, for the most part, economics and education. And a lot of them were really well, were still connected to back their families and their communities back in India, and they really wanted to continue the independence struggle, and they wanted to do so at home because of their connections and the opportunities they could have here, and really try to promote it, the independence movement and the independence struggle in the United States, possibly getting support from the American public or the American government. There was this Indian Revolutionary Party called the Gudder Party, which is based out in California and the West Coast, that was really active in the independence struggle. And they also, Saruji Mohan, which was a person that I worked with on this project, she focused on the Hindu-German conspiracy out on the West Coast, which was really fascinating. I had no idea about that. The Gudder Party and the other Indian revolutionaries getting support from the Imperial Germany to disrupt bridge war efforts, and also, you know, as an extension of that, possibly getting Indian independence. So it was really interesting. And then being caught by U.S. authorities with the help of British intelligence was just fascinating. So this piece, Young India, was a call to the American public, but also the Indian American community, to pay attention to the what's going on in India, and also promoting that independence struggle, and showing that we're also Americans by, you know, highlighting the service of these soldiers, the Indian American soldiers that were fighting the U.S. military at that time. So it was a lot of moving parts, a lot of multifaceted process and components for the Indian, at least for the Indian American experience during the First World War.
Yeah, the Hindu-German conspiracy sounds a bit like the light version of the Zimmermann telegram and everything. I know that the Germans had, as early as 1914, they had always had these grand ideas that they, you know, just with a little bit of nudging and some very limited military resources, we can get all the peoples across the globe to rise up against the British overlords. I mean, starting with the jihad in the Ottoman Empire, and they also tried to do the same thing in Persia. And there was an expedition to Afghanistan and so on and so on.
Right, and also supporting the Irish Republican Army, Indian revolutions in the United States. So they had their hands on everything as much as they could.
Yeah, you can see a pattern here. That's very interesting, definitely. So you found all these kind of moving parts and everything. And I think a lot of our listeners here, and we also get these requests a lot in the YouTube comments, is how do I even start researching something like that? I mean, you had a name, and like, where do I start? Like, if I have a relative or even just a photo or a name.
Right. So you can use Ancestry Institution, but that's a subscription. So you have to pay for it. But even if you have, you know, like a close by, like a National Archives or any kind of museum or historical society, they're more than willing to help you out based on where you are. So that's what I was lucky enough to be at the commission and get access to the ancestryinstitution.com. But I also got connected to the Library of Congress and National Archives to obtain more information and more access to these files. So I definitely think it would just be a matter of just looking at your local library and, you know, going to see what kind of sources that are available for you to use to investigate. And you would be surprised then where those, you know, that simple task of just going to a library or just contacting someone through email at the archives could lead you. And it's just phenomenal that, you know, there's a wealth of information out there, and most of it is digitized. You know, we're living in an age where, you know, technology is continuing to expand and be resourceful to us in a number of ways. So you don't even have to leave your home to get access to some of these documents and other information. So it's just... it's a incredible the time that we're living in for being able to gain access to information.
Cool. So you, basically, it's kind of like a detective work. That's
right. Absolutely. Yeah, investigation. And you know, I like to think I'm a historian in training. Finding clues, piecing together information, things like that is just it's fascinating. It's, you know, it's thrilling. It's a totally unique experience than, you know, in a science discipline or mathematics and things like that, or, you know, humanity or any other humanity subject. It's a great, yeah, it's a totally unique experience.
In the beginning, you mentioned that you put all your findings and everything in a database of your own. So if people are looking specifically for just Indian American soldiers of the war, they can also access this database, which might be a good starting point.
Yeah, so the database is on the United States World War I Centennial Commission website. It's called Indians Who Served. So if you go to World War I numerical centennial.org/Indians Who Served, you'll find the database. And it's under a section called Vande Mataram in the U.S. It, like I mentioned earlier, it also talks about the Indian-German Hindu conspiracy, and also... it's below it is my work with the World War I Centennial Commission. So we're still adding and updating that database. And right now I have found close to 50 soldiers of all creeds, Hindu, Muslim, Sikhs, even Christians or Indians that converted to Christianity. And they're settled all across the United States, far as Massachusetts, South Carolina, Texas, Florida, Montana, Missouri, so all over the United States during World War One, and then also post-World War One.
Great. Of course, I will put the links to that in the description of the podcast, so you can find them right away. Is there anything you want to add that I didn't ask?
I definitely think this is all a very unknown history of the Indian American community in the United States, and also the question becomes, so what, right? And so what? And the question to that is, one, Indian immigration, it challenges the general assumption that Indian immigration started after 1965, and also shows that, you know, the Indian American community that has also contributed to the development of America as a nation, but also as in the military. So they're just as American as anybody else. So it also encourage if there's any people in the United States that are Indian and that have probably, you know, have a history in the United States, that might know any relative they have that served during the World War I, I'm more than willing to hear about it. I can be reached at tkilo14@stlawu.edu to talk more about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I will also put a contact for you in the podcast description. This is a great project, I have to say, and it's really great to, you know, see that this kind of trend of very local, very specialized history still is another puzzle piece in understanding this global conflict. And for example, when you contacted me, I also had no idea about this topic, and I was very curious right away to learn more about it. Did you, by the way, ever meet or hear from any relatives of these soldiers?
Yeah. So I did hear from one particular person named Rahul Gujral. He's based out of Texas, and I found his great uncle on his mom's side, Colonel Pashupati Joseph Sarma. He's buried in the Arlington Cemetery, and he found my work and he was just blown away by it. And then he provided more information about his great uncle and then also a photograph. So he was just amazed that, you know, I found him, and then, you know, investigated more. He's like, I never saw his draft card or his death certificate and other documents. So he's like, thank you for, you know, doing this work and continue doing it, because we really need to show to the world and also to the American community that, you know, we're part of the American story, and that, you know, we also had our struggles as like any other community in the United States, and we continue to fight.
No, that's great, and I wish you all the best for the future and for the project. I hope some people that listen here will, you know, maybe even help you or be encouraged to dig up stories, to dig up information about their own community, about even just their relative. I'm currently also researching my family in World War II, World War I. Talk to the people in your family, as long as, you know, especially some of your grandparents or so are still around. You will be amazed what they will be able to tell you when you ask. Don't assume they told you everything without asking. That's my personal advice. So thanks a lot, Tanvir. As I said, all the necessary information is in the description. Again, definitely check out the website for the World War I Centennial Commission, and also check out their podcast. They have been a great support for us personally at the Great War, and for everything related to the centennial over in the US, they are basically the go-to source you should check out. So thanks a lot again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And best of luck for 2018.
Yeah, thank you so much.